Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Thursday, June 25th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A panel of Zimbabweans speaking in Washington raised cautious optimism over Zimbabwe's political and economic future.
Zimbabweans are known for their resilience and incorrigible optimism. And this is what brings us here, that while we describe as we should and acknowledge as we should that the country is in a political and economic crisis, we also want to believe that there are prospects for democratization, which is taking place, that there are prospects for economic recovery, which may not be too evident.
A freelance journalist from Chiredzi will serve an 8-month jail term for publishing an unregistered newspaper called The Southern Mirror.
We have been charged with contravening Section 72, Subsection 1 of AIPA, which says that no person shall carry on or operate a mass media service without a valid registration.
And residents of mineral-rich areas like Marange demand that mining companies improve their communities.
We talked of polishing plants. If companies can establish some polishing plants, it creates employment for our youth, women, and also empowers the community.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
Panelists discussing the state of Zimbabwe's democracy and economic development at an event hosted by the Washington-based think tank National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, expressed cautious optimism of the country's future. Studio 7's Chris Gande has more.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton, one of three panelists at the NED event titled The Challenges of Democratization and Economic Recovery in Zimbabwe, dismissed an Arab Spring-like revolt in Zimbabwe despite the country's political and economic hardships, citing the population's high level of education and strong religious belief. Wharton further said he was optimistic because Zimbabwe was in a very slow generational transition from a generation of men and women who fought against the minority government in the 1960s and 70s to a modern, pragmatic and less didactic group of people who are coming behind them.
I do not think that Zimbabwe is likely to see the sort of mass violence that has plagued other parts of Africa, partly because of education, partly because of social values of the people of Zimbabwe, partly because of the fabric of religious belief in Zimbabwe. I think these are all forces that will tend to hold society together rather than drive it apart.
Wharton attributed part of Zimbabwe's problem to the caliber of the country's politicians, whom he says are more interested in it as a way of living, to pay their bills and get nice cars, than protecting the people. Academic and SAPES Trust Chair Ipo Mandaza, also a panelist, too expressed optimism for Zimbabwe, but described the last 10 years as tumultuous but filled with incorrigible optimism.
Zimbabweans are known for their resilience and incorrigible optimism. And this is what brings us here, that while we describe as we should and acknowledge as we should that the country is in a political and economic crisis, we also want to believe that there are prospects for democratization, which is taking place, that there are prospects for economic recovery, which may not be too evident.
But he questioned Zimbabwe's ability to reform under the current leadership.
We had a constitution which was adopted in 2013, a new constitution, by no means perfect, but it does provide, in very important respects, the basis for the separation of powers, an accountable executive, a robust legislature, and a fiercely independent judiciary. It also outlines in great detail the need for national institutions which buttress and propel the democratic process.
Mandaza, who is part of a movement called the National Convergence Convention with Bishop Sebastian Bakare, advocates for engagement with the 50% of Zimbabwe's skilled professionals now living in the diaspora. Businessman and consultant Shingi Munyeza, who was also part of a business delegation from Zimbabwe that is currently on a fact-finding mission to the U.S., said while prospects for an economic turnaround are high, concern over the lack of liquidity in the formal sector exists. Munyeza said the adoption of the U.S. dollar as a currency of exchange has plunged the country into a crisis because goods and services are more expensive than from South Africa.
Government has been addressing the debt issue with the multilateral agencies up to now. I think the Minister of Finance has been back and forth in New York, Washington, and trying to deal with these issues. There's also a need to normalize relationships with the West so that the perception of risk, the country or sovereign risk that Zimbabwe is purported to have, will be reduced so that we have more trading lines and trading partners there.
Mandaza said he and his partners in the National Convergence hope to raise $10 billion that will go toward debt relief, education and other programs that could help jumpstart the country's economy. The Constitutional Court on Thursday barred President Robert Mugabe from declaring Mwenezi East constituency vacant following the expulsion of MP Kudakwashe Basikiti from ZANU-PF. The full Constitutional Court bench agreed with Basikiti that Mugabe should be stopped from declaring the seat vacant until the High Court finalizes his expulsion case. Represented by MDC Renewal Team Tendai Biti, the former Masvingo Provincial State Minister recently filed an urgent chamber application seeking to bar Mugabe from calling for by-elections in his constituency.
A court in Chiredzi has sentenced a freelance journalist to 1 year in jail for publishing an unregistered newspaper called Southern Mirror. Patrick Chitongo, however, who was jointly charged with four other co-accused of not registering with the Zimbabwe Media Commission, will only serve an eight-month term, though his lawyers vow to appeal both the conviction and sentence. The other four were subsequently acquitted after it was established they were students on attachment. Chitongo's lawyer, Martin Mureri, of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, unsuccessfully argued that the published newspaper was just a dummy meant to be presented to the ZMC for purposes of registration. Blessing Zulu of Studio 7 spoke with Chitongo's lawyer, Martin Mureri.
They have been charged with Central Section 7-2, subsection 1 of AIPA, which says that no person shall carry on or operate a mass media service without a valid registration, certificate or license or permit. So it was alleged that on the 28th of November 2014, the accused person carried out mass media activities, that is, they printed to the public the Southern Mirror without a valid license. We went to court and on the 23rd day of June 2015, three accused persons were acquitted, namely Courage Kudzwida, Courage Bandera, Bismarck Kudzwida, and Dadirai Masoken, and Patrick Chitongo was the only person who was convicted there. And the magistrate said that indeed he was carrying out mass media activities without a valid or a registration certificate. He said that the paper went viral in the Chirezi district, and thereby giving the people of Kirez the wrong information, because it was information which was coming from an unregistered source.
So is Mr. Chitongo currently in detention?
Yes, he is currently in detention at Kirez prison, that is Buffalo Range.
That was lawyer Martin Mureri of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Chiredzi.
Zimbabwean communities living in areas endowed with rich mineral resources say the government should ensure that companies mining these minerals should process them locally so that they may also benefit from what is being extracted and exported to various nations. Our correspondent Lloyd Hamoyo reports from Mutare.
Representatives of several communities in Chiyazwa Diamond Fields, Mutoko and the Bigita district told the Manikland Provincial Alternative Mining Indaba, which ended today, that the local processing of minerals would ensure that companies are able to create thousands of jobs. Fano Mafuta from Mutoko, where black granite is mined, told the Indaba that companies are ripping off communities as they get high profits after exporting various minerals.
We talked of polishing plants. If companies can establish some polishing plants, it creates employment for our youth, women, and also empowers the community. It also adds value to the community.
He said government attempted 2 years ago without success to tackle this issue through the formation of community share ownership schemes under the country's Black Economic Empowerment Program. Under the program, companies parted with millions of dollars when the Ministry of Youth and Economic Empowerment used a section of the indigenization law to set up community share ownership schemes in which funds were supposed to be channeled into local projects. The government stopped talking about the scheme following the 2013 general elections won by President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. For Mafuta, it does not make sense that this program failed and companies continue to export minerals like black granite to China and Russia while they are wallowing in poverty. Love Monkwada from Chiyazwa Diamond Fields also believes they are not benefiting from local gems that fetch good prices in Belgium and other countries.
We are facing a problem as regards to payment of school fees, especially those children who were promised this company, Marange Resource. It has been paying for their school fees for a number of years. Thank you for that. But, well, the problem now, as they have stopped, is now a year, and now the burden is thrown to the parents who cannot now afford to actually settle their arrears. So we have got a number of students to the margin of about 200 who are out of school because of that problem.
Another villager, Danmo Modisi from Tonorai near Beshnev Bridge, noted they are always on the receiving end in mineral mining areas as their sources of water like the Ozi and the Save rivers have been seriously polluted through some mining activities.
The water has a high iron content and silicon, and those elements in that waste is causing a lot of miscarriages and even to people. And it's causing rash development to people. And even fishing and garden are no longer viable in that river as a result of this pollution.
Chief Marange said he's disappointed that over 600 people recently lost their jobs in diamond mining areas in his area following reports that diamonds have almost been depleted. He is not the only one who has been devastated by mining companies that have left permanent scars on the ground in areas like Bikita, Mashingo Province, which is the home of Eugenia Manjoro. Manjoro said mining companies have left trenches and gullies that are a serious hazard to both livestock and human beings. The two-day Manikland Provincial Mining Indaba was organized by the Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association to create dialogue between the government, business in the extractive sector, and communities to reach common ground on community beneficiation on diamonds and other minerals. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Amoyo.
South Africa is threatening to withdraw its membership from the International Criminal Court following the controversy over its failure to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir while he was there for the recent African Union summit. Under the Rome Statute, South Africa could have arrested him as Mr. Bashir is wanted by the ICC on charges of war crimes and genocide related to the ongoing conflict in Sudan's Darfur region. But Mr. Bashir left the country defying an order to stay as the South African court considered the matter. The court handed down the order for Mr. Bashir's arrest just hours after he left the country. And now, South Africa's government spokesman Geoff Radebe said a cabinet meeting resolved to withdraw from the ICC as a last resort after a review after they reviewed the statute that sets out the guidelines for the ICC. While chairing the AU summit, President Mugabe voiced his disregard for the court of last resort and reiterated that Zimbabwe is not a signatory to the treaty.
The view that we should distance ourselves from the ICC. But unfortunately, the treaty that set it up was signed not by the AU, but by individual countries who thought the ICC was there for doing good, to help us try certain other cases, the political field especially, cases of violence and so on, that would happen in a country, say, during an election campaign. But those of them who signed the treaty are now regretting. We didn't sign it, Zimbabwe. We said, no, we don't submit ourselves to justice outside our country. What for?
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up.
Legal minds debate the temporary technicality that has placed Information Minister Jonathan Moyes' cabinet position in limbo.
And a landmark ruling now gives children born out of wedlock fair access to inheritance.
Stay tuned for more details.
Any child born out of wedlock was not eligible automatically to inherit from the deceased parent's estate. Therefore, this meant that children born out of wedlock were facing challenges in accessing their deceased parent's inheritance.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The U.S. Supreme Court has handed President Barack Obama a victory over political opponents on his health care program that many critics had labeled socialist in nature.
Nigeria's new president will meet with U.S. President Barack Obama next month to discuss the fight against a militant group of Boko Haram and other crucial issues.
And convicted Boston Marathon bomber Zokhav Tsarnaev apologized at his sentencing hearing Wednesday before he was formally sentenced to death for the deadly 2013 attack.
The reported ousting of Zimbabwe's Information Minister Jonathan Moyo from his ministerial post Tuesday has left legal minds rolling over what is being labeled a, quote, temporary technicality. President Mugabe appointed Moyo as a non-constituency lawmaker in 2013 under the Constitution Section 104, Subsections 3, which says up to 5 ministers or deputy ministers can be chosen from outside parliament for their professional skills and competence. The confusion was brought on by Moyo's recent victory in Cholocho, which makes him now an elected member of parliament. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to constitutional law expert and law lecturer Alex Magaisa and Professor Walshman Ngube, who's also a constitutional law expert. Ngube says it would be useful to have clarity from government on the move for a proper legal analysis.
What I know about what Section 108 from the top of my head is that it basically provides that a person who is a minister will lose his position as minister. I think it's in three scenarios. The first one, of course, if the president relieves him of his duties or fires him. The second one is, of course, if that person resigns. And the third one, if that person is a minister who is a member of parliament and he ceases to be a member of parliament, he will and sees being a minister automatically as well. That's what Section 108 is all about. It is absolutely no relevant to a minister who is from outside Parliament and is therefore not a member of Parliament. If that is what is thought is relevant or is applicable, it certainly is not applicable.
Dr. Magaisa, your take on that particular section?
I have tried, because what we are trying to do here is to try and get into the minds of the government lawyers and to find out what it is that might have informed them if they did advise the president that Professor Moyo should turn down. And I was looking at one of the subsections here. Unlike Professor Moyo, I've got the advantage of the constitution in front of me. So there is a provision which says that if a person who is a minister, but not being a member of parliament, he will vacate office if circumstances arise that would result in his or her seat becoming vacant were he or she a member of parliament. Now, what this requires us to do is to go to the circumstances under which a member of parliament would lose his seat. And these circumstances are provided for under Section 129 of the Constitution. There are quite a number of them which might be applicable. And I was trying to look at them to see which one would apply to this. And the only provisions which remotely, and I'm thinking here in the mind of the government lawyers, what they might have been thinking. There is a provision which says that if a person was holding public office and then accepts public office or becomes a member of parliament, he would have to relinquish public office. Now, I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. You know, the point is that as a minister, he was holding public office.
Professor Ncube, until we get direct word from the government or the president himself of what is going on, it's mere speculation on what is happening here. But in your view, is there something at play in regards to what is going on within ZANU-PF?
Well, I am unable to get into the minds of the ZANU-PF people who might be involved in making whatever decision has been made. We don't even know what decision has been made. All we have are the speculation of analysts and media people. So it's difficult to say. But just going back briefly to what Dr. Magaisa said by the cross-reference to these clauses where a person will lose their seat upon conviction and all of those things which are tabulated in that particular part of the Constitution. If in fact, as Dr. Magaisa speculates, that might have been the interpretation given to the president, all I can say is that it is absolutely irrational. If that is what they gave the president as advice, then clearly it is irrational, illogical, and thoughtless advice, if in fact it was given. So one is still left where they were at the beginning, totally baffled as to what all this drama queening is all about.
Dr. Magaisa, your last word.
There is a lot of drama here. It's unnecessary drama. If indeed the president is using advice that he has been given by his lawyers, whether in his party or in government, the question that I would ask is, this is not something that came out of the blue. They had 3 months to prepare for the by-election. They knew that Professor Moyo would be elected or had a high chance of being elected, they would have prepared for this situation. In other words, there would have been absolutely no need for the drama that we are witnessing.
That was constitutional expert and law lecturer at Kent University in the United Kingdom, Alex Magaisa. You also heard from Professor Welshman Ncube, a constitutional law expert and leader of a formation of the MDC. Both spoke with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
Children born out of wedlock now have equal rights to an estate as those born in marriage, a High Court judge has ruled. Prior to the judgment by Justice Hlekani Ngwaira, children born out of wedlock often faced discrimination in matters of entitlement to inheritance and other property. The Senior Legal Programs Officer for Women and Law in Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, Dorcas Makaza Kanyimo, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Wiye the ruling will help align the laws with the Constitution.
The laws of inheritance in Zimbabwe depend mainly on the type of marriage that one has entered into. And in Zimbabwe, we have three marriage regimes. We have the civil marriage, which is Chapter 511, and we have the customary marriage, which is Chapter 507, and the unregistered customary law union, where lobola is only paid. So if one has the Chapter 511 marriage, according to inheritance, he or she could inherit from the estate of the deceased spouse, together with his or her children born within that wedlock. So any child born out of wedlock was not eligible automatically to inherit from the deceased parent's estate. Therefore, this meant that children born out of wedlock were facing challenges in accessing their deceased parent's inheritance if the surviving spouse had a Chapter 511 marriage. However, under customary marriages, there was no such discrimination. All children born in or out of wedlock were regarded as children of the deceased and was inherited in equal share. So the difference was on the marriage. If the marriage was a civil marriage, out of wedlock children had no access in prison. The best they could get was maintenance from that deceased estate.
So what does this new ruling mean, and how is it being received by women's rights and children's rights organizations in Zimbabwe?
It is a welcome development because women's rights and children's rights were often clashing in relation to inheritance law. You'd find that the competition amongst the surviving spouses and the children to inherit from the deceased estate. Therefore, this judgment brings about that equality that we are seeking and that is being stated in the Constitution under Section 1556, where it's promoting non-discrimination. Whether you're a child born in or out of wedlock, or a stepchild or an orphan, whether you're a spouse married under 511 or 507, everyone can actually inherit from the deceased estate, which is what we were seeking for so many years. And this judgment makes it even easier for the alignment of laws from the Constitution to the inheritance laws.
That was Senior Legal Programs Officer for Women and Law in Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, Dorcas Makaza Kanyimo, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie from Gwanda in Matabeleland South.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts are Marvelous Mhlanganyawie and Praxedis Jeremiah of the Women's Roundtable discuss inheritance. The High Court recently made a landmark ruling that now gives children born in and out of wedlock the same rights to their parents' estate and property, saying this should be shared equally with no discrimination. What are your views?
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70. Baby, my heart could still fall less hard at 23. And I'm thinking about touch of a hand. Well, me, I fall in love with you every single day, and I just wanna tell you I am. So honey, now take me into your loving arms, kiss me under the your head on my beating heart. I'm thinking out loud, maybe we found love right where.
Now to recap today's top stories.
A panel of Zimbabweans speaking in Washington raised cautious optimism over Zimbabwe's political and economic future.
A freelance journalist from Chiredzi will serve an 8-month jail term for publishing an unregistered newspaper called The Southern Mirror.
And residents of mineral-rich areas like Marange demand that mining companies improve their communities.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Thank you for joining us. And now please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standekile Mhlanga and Ntungamile Nkomo. This is Chris Gande in Washington. Good night, Zimbabwe.
This is Jonga Kandemiri wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.